Well, I say this every time he's on. Are you ready for a little off the record? On the record. Great to have him, the great Joe Campolo, managing partner of the great law firm, Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Three locations around Concord, Bridgehampton. And, of course, right in Nassau County, right in Westbury, 738-9100, 631-738-9100, CMMLLP.com. The aforementioned JNC, Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Always a pleasure, sir. How are you?
My man, I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I'll tell you, be careful of those Mets. You know, when you write them off, you know, you get swept by the Cubbies and everything else. Listen, the D-backs come into City Field. They're going to sweep them today, no question. That's a horrible team, Arizona. But they have now leapfrogged them, I do believe, Joe. And now are tied with the Phillies. They still have the Brewers two out. Brewers are tied with the Cubbies, who lost last. You had to really keep up on top of this one. But that's a great race for that wild card, huh? That's on Mets are right there.
Yeah, just when you think they're out of it, they come back. You know, I was happy to see Mats finally do what us Mets fans have been hoping he would be able to do for years now. You know, Ward Melville guy, my heart's always rooting for the kid out there. I think we talked about this last time. I still feel like we needed 20 more games before we started our run, Jay. I know these Mets too long and too well. I'm not sure if they're going to get it there, but I got to tell you, in rare deference to your Yankees, I'm not sure that anybody can beat them this year. I'm not sure that, you know, that team is just peaking consistently well. And I just think that I'd love to see a Subway Series. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see it. But I'm just not sure anybody can beat the Yankees this year.
No, let's see what happens. I'm still a little skeptical. We'll see. I like the way Paxton's pitching, little Tanaka thrown in there. They're all cylinders, but you know, the injury bug has got us, you know? I mean, we'll see. Let's see how Stanton comes back next week. He hasn't played in 5 years, it seems, but, let's see what Giancarlo does. And I'll say this about the Mets. Think about this, Joe. 26 blown saves. If you could have those back, now you're not going to win all of them, but blown saves, folks, is when the team has the lead. Not to say the Mets would have won them all. Even half. If you won half of those 26, think about this. 13 more wins, Joe. You'd be fighting for that division.
It's unbelievable, Jay, how every single closer that comes to the Mets ruins their career. It's absolutely unbelievable to me. If you're a closing pitcher, do not ever go to the Mets. You will ruin your career. I don't know how. I don't know why. It has plagued us forever, though.
Let's get into some hot topics here. You know, I'm going to be watching tonight the debate round three Houston. ABC has it 10. Thank goodness. You know, no more two-night deals. I'm tired of it. I'm glad some bowed out. Some are still in it. Why? I don't know. But with that being said, it's going to be interesting because you're going to have Biden right next to him. Will be Elizabeth Warren on one side, Bernie on the other side, and here we go. Now, I'm not big on these debates of late. I don't like the formats, you know, 30 seconds/60 seconds, interruptions galore. I want to hear a candidate finish a thought before a panelist chimes in and says time's up. I don't want to hear that. I'm tired of it. But an interesting dynamic tonight on that stage.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still wondering when we're going to get into policy, right? So this is, you know, this is the challenge. And I guess this is what Donald Trump is just sitting back waiting for is, you know, right now, and Amy Klobuchar, I think, hit the nail on the head. She basically said at these debates, stop pitting us against each other. Let us start talking about our policy issues. And there's a drastic level of frustration, I think, amongst the Democratic primary members right now that they're not able to get their policy issues out to the American people because it's blood sport, right? They want to be pitting, people want to see blood sport. They want to pit each other against each other. They want to know why not Joe Biden. They want to know, you know, is Bernie Sanders too crazy for the job? And rather than get policy issues out on the table, it's been the moderators and the press that has been really stoking this fire. And I, you know, I agree. Klobuchar came out complaining about that, and I don't think that that's just her complaining. I think that that's right, because still don't know what the policies are. And you know, as much as I can say that Elizabeth Warren is an incredibly intelligent woman, has really thought these issues through and has a plan. Nobody really knows the plan, and is, you know, the centrists in America going to resonate to her plan? And she needs a lot of time to get out and be explaining these plans and why they're important. And the longer we keep doing this nonsense, the more Donald Trump is just sitting back enjoying it. You know, the more every single time his name comes up, he enjoys it. You know, a classic narcissist is just going to love to hear his name. And if they make it all about Trump and the economy remains strong, and Trump's, you know, making progress on campaign promises like the wall and immigration, I'm not sure that they're going to have enough time to convince, you know, independents and moderate Republicans and Democrats, the Democratic nominees, of why their much different policies should be enacted. So it'd be interesting to see if 10 makes any difference. I don't think so, Jay. I hate these debates. I hate these formats. I find nothing useful comes out of them.
I kind of agree with you. I really do. I will be watching, though, a couple of fronts here. I want to see how Biden, you know, listen, everything is made of the gaffes and everything else. I want to truly see if the fastball has been lost. A very important night for Biden. I know he's leading in every poll imaginable, but they're going to be gunning for him, you know. And I think it's an important night for Kamala Harris. Now, she's been my choice all along to get the nomination. She's not polling well. She had a great first one. She came back, the whole thing with the segregation and everything else as a kid at Biden. That was her defining moment. Did not have a defining moment in the second one in Miami. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think a very important night for her. She has to make some gain here. She has to have a defining moment, something. You know, Cory Booker had the one at it last night. I want to see Kamala Harris step it up here tonight. Big one.
Yeah, and I agree. I had high hopes for her. The challenge is, see, somebody like, you know, the three front runners, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden, it's easier for them because they are running on a platform that, for the most part, they've consistently had their entire career. Okay. Folks like Kamala Harris, you know, who was a former federal prosecutor and has had to take on, you know, different views now on a national stage than she did, you know, as the top law enforcement officer in California. It's very hard for them to switch course. I think that's Kirsten Gillibrand's problem too. Is she had to, on a national stage, to attract Democratic voters from outside of New York, they have to take a competing view on views they held while they've been senators in various states. And that's very difficult to do. And I think that that makes their message very unclear. But Biden, Warren, and Sanders are just being very consistent and very comfortable with the positions they've always had, they've always taken. And so I think that's why, you know, most voters are gravitating towards them now, consistently, and they're consistently growing in their support. So I'm not sure now in this cycle if Harris is going to be able to straighten out her messaging to be clear enough, to be convincing to a national audience. 4 years from now, perhaps a different story. Now she's learning, the ropes, and she's learning on a national level, on a national campaign, how to smooth out that messaging rather than, you know, the rough and tumble. And she's learning that a soundbite, while it might get you a bump in the short run, can actually do you long-term harm. So you got to be careful about that as well. But I think if she can, you know, if she can smooth out her story, she was certainly somebody I was interested in watching how her campaign was going to mature. Elizabeth Warren, I think, is a very, very strong candidate. I'm just not sure that mainstream America is going to agree with her policy issues once they're out there.
Should be interesting tonight. Let's go to immigration. Listen, scoring for the White House, big victory from the Supreme Court, Joe. The rule dramatically limiting the ability of Central American migrants to claim asylum can go into effect nationwide, according to the court. even though, even while legal challenges to it are still alive. So the rule, folks, essentially, Joe, bars people traveling through Mexico from being able to claim asylum at the U.S. border there. So, and it, you know, I tell you, this has been like a roller coaster. You know, the talk of immigration, how the courts rule and everything else. We have seen the appellate courts rule on the other side. This particular case, as far as asylum here, is a big victory for the White House.
Yeah, so a couple of things about it that are very, very interesting. You know, one is it was a 7-2 decision from the Supreme Court. Now, you're not going to see that from, you know, from mainstream media because they don't want, you know, they don't want to give Trump the satisfaction that, you know, two of the quote-unquote liberal justices agreed. But the court got it right. I mean, in the past, so the law is clear, and this issue of asylum, right? So asylum is if somebody in their country is undergoing, you know, political, religious oppression, feels that they are not able to, you know, practice or being corrupted or being coerced, they are, you know, they are allowed to come to the United States and ask for political asylum. Say my feelings, my thoughts, my morality is more in line with the United States, and I want to apply for political asylum. I want to be safe here, and I want to apply for citizenship in the process. And that's fine. That's great. That's exactly one of the things that the United States stands for. The law has always been that, you know, if you are going to apply for asylum here and you go through another country prior to getting here, you should apply for asylum in that country. Never been enforced. One of those policy issues that just have never been enforced. And so what happens is Central American countries like Honduras, Guatemala, and people coming from those countries would walk through Mexico, never apply for asylum from Mexico, and then come to the U.S. border and apply for asylum. And then the policy would be while they were applying for asylum, they would be able to stay here in the United States, and while their application was pending. Well, what the Trump administration is doing is just enforcing the existing law, and that is, you know, A, you have to apply for asylum in another country if you pass through that country first before coming to the United States. And B, you can't stay here. You know, if you haven't done that, then you can't stay here. The lower courts had issued an injunction prohibiting or preventing the president and the executive branch from executing on that and enforcing that. And the Supreme Court came back and said, no, the administration is allowed to enforce, you know, those laws while the legal challenges are being made. And then that's sort of the right call. And Justice Kagan and Justice Stephen Breyer from the liberal wing agreed with that in 7-2. Justice Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg dissented. Basically, and their dissent was basically the policy has been for so long to not do that, that it's unfair to change the rules now, which I understand, but that's not the law. You know, two times now the Supreme Court, and I guess this has been Trump's saving grace, is this Supreme Court and getting some judges on there that have been helpful to him, because now it's been twice that he's had big victories on immigration policy, which is going to be a huge issue in 2020, right? So the Supreme Court approved his ability to take a couple of billion dollars out of the Pentagon's budget not too long ago to complete the wall or continue the wall. And the wall is clearly, you know, one of his cornerstone campaign issues. And now they've allowed him, you know, through his law enforcement agencies, to detain and not allow asylum seekers here into the United States. Those are going to be two big wins that he's going to be able to be out there on the campaign trail touting, probably coming at a good time for him. So his polling numbers are very low right now. You know, but as these debates are going on, he's going to be able to be out there sort of patting himself on the back and touting these wins.
I agree 100%. You look at the economy, you're over 27,000, Joe, another 200 plus points yesterday with the Dow. You're right, two feathers in the cap going forward. And I'll tell you, put a third in there with North Carolina yesterday, a special election in their ninth district. You know, Bishop winning, president in Fayetteville the night prior. Listen, if you think that this guy, based on the approval rating, he's down 8 points. I get it, 36% or whatever it is. But in essence, you know, he still is there. You know, I mean, he still commands the crowds and everything else. And what you saw in the tobacco state the other night in that special election, you know, could really only accentuate the power of this president. When he goes out there and supports his party, people listen. And that's something you have to keep on top of here.
Yeah, look, I was very surprised. I mean, I think in North Carolina, he was down about, you know, 12 or 14 percentage points a few weeks out of the election. And Trump and Pence go down there and lean in, and the guy pulls it out. And that's something that America should be watching very closely right now. You know, for folks that are out there counting Donald Trump out in 2020, you know, he's not a front runner horse. You know, he's not a horse who likes to race from the front. He stays down in his polling numbers, and the candidates that, you know, that support him and that pull out these elections are down in polling numbers, and they're come from behind, you know, winners. And so I don't think Donald Trump cares at all that his approval ratings are low. I think he actually relishes that. Because he loves having these come from behind victories. So, you know, there's a lot of, and I understand there's a lot of credence in North Carolina that the margins of victory were much lower than Trump had carrying that state in 2016, but a win's a win. And, you know, he was behind, way behind, with just a few weeks left until Trump leaned into it. So people gotta be watching it, Jay. It's gonna be a fascinating, lead up to this presidential election. I think, you know, there's going to be great stuff.
I agree with you 100%. Be careful. The only thing I tell you, now a lot of people will say this, the firing of Bolton yesterday, the security advisor, fourth now in that particular category, Joe. You know, a lot of people will say there is a big divide there. It seemed to me, you know, with these Taliban meetings that were going to take, the timing could have been worse. 9/11 and everything else. You can't have meetings at Camp David, I'm sorry, with the Taliban of all groups. And maybe there was a disagreement in that regard. Maybe it was other things. But, you know, all along you thought Bolton and Trump were on the same page. And then the rug gets pulled out there. But, you know, a lot of people will harp on that tonight, I guarantee you. Regarding the divide and everything else, we have seen the merry-go-round as far as some of these cabinet posts. It's nothing new. It doesn't surprise me the least, I'll tell you that much. But all in all, this is what happens within the confines of this administration. That's all there is.
You know, John Bolton is John Bolton. John Bolton's been that way for as long as he's held any sort of public office. He's as hawkish as they come. He's a tough guy, right? And so that's probably why Trump brought him in to be part of this. And he's been in other presidential, you know, cabinets and around the table for that reason. When you're, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to have a voice like that sitting around the table to get that perspective. But what Trump's trying to do right now with North Korea in particular, and I think North Korea is one of the reasons why he pushed Bolton out. What Trump's trying to do with North Korea is convince the world that you know, him and Chairman Kim there are friends, whatever that means. I don't know what that means. But I know the negotiating strategy. I'm watching the negotiating strategy unfold. And the strategy is Trump's trying to make friends with them. Trump's trying to do that so that there's some trust there, because I think Trump understands that there's going to be no progress unless Kim Jong-un thinks he has somewhat of a friendship or an ally in the United States and can trust them to a certain extent. And so that's the only strategy Trump can play right now, having set it up that way. Because if he turns around and he allows someone like Bolton to dictate the strategy over in North Korea, it's going to spook them away, and it's going to cause them to dig in deep with China right now, which Trump can't afford to have happen with the tariff wars that he has plotting against China. So I understand the strategy. It was probably a mistake to bring Bolton in the first place. But I don't disagree with him getting rid of him at this point. Mike Pompeo seems to be the right guy to try and work through these issues.
Listen, I agree. God forbid if Pompeo's out. You know, to me, you got a gaping hole if that happens, Joe. We'll see what happens here. I agree with you. Bolton could be replaced. I would like to see, you know, more thinking involved, though. You know, consideration. Taliban in 9/11, the whole thing. Not a good situation at all. Joe, we're going to take a quick break. We have Mr. Campolo to the bottom. Quick one. Come back. We're going to go local with Tom Sporter right after these words. All right. We are back with Off the Record, On the Record with the great Joe Campolo. Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe does a job and a half with his firm. It's incredible. Voted best firm on the island. We know that by far. Three locations. Don't forget Westbury right on Post Avenue. In addition, you have, of course, the staples of Bridgehampton and right here in Ronkonkoma. All right, let's get to the Tom Sporter deal, Joe. We know this thing's going on. I think it's November 12th. Remember, this thing has been put back a little bit. To me, there's a lot of posturing going on here. You know better than anyone else as an attorney. These things happen in the courtrooms. There's a lot of jockeying for position, so to speak. Phone records, what's in, what's out. Joan Asrec has got her hands full, as she did. Remember, she presided over the Mangano deal. But in essence, you know, we get ready for another type of deal here with the Sporter. There's a lot of back and forth going on here, Joe, a little behind the scenes.
So interesting twist, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's a really interesting twist in this case. So, you know, court papers were filed yesterday by defense attorneys for Tom Sporter, and, you know, just reading the reports and reading the tea leaves, and my own personal opinion is, you know, the defense is now starting to change the scope of their defense purely because of what happened with the Mueller report. What happened with Trump and what happened with Attorney General Barr and Deputy Attorney Rod Rosenstein? So remember that Mueller didn't take a position as to whether or not the president obstructed justice, and Attorney General Barr came out and said that the Department of Justice is not going to find that there was obstruction of justice because Mueller found there was no collusion, and therefore there was no underlying crime for the president to be obstructing, right? But that's not really the legal standard for obstruction of justice. And typically in the past, there's never been a requirement that there actually be an underlying crime. Obstruction of justice is along or more the lines of the following. You know, the FBI or the grand jury is doing an investigation. Somebody finds out about it. Somebody asks a witness to lie. Somebody asks or destroys evidence. Somebody tampers with evidence while they're aware that this is going on. And that person, therefore, has obstructed justice. And the allegations, you know, the allegations against Sporter and McPartland all along have been that, you know, they knew the feds were looking into the conduct of Burke, and when they found that out, they started circling the wagons. They started threatening the police department that if they were leaking, they would ruin their careers. These are, of course, all allegations. They started making, you know, police get represented by attorneys from the union who were going to play ball and stick to the stories. You know, they were conspiring with Burke himself as to how to cover it up. That's been the whole underlying charge and the facts that have led to this charge, as has been reported in Newsday and other publications. And what the defense is saying now is it can't be obstruction because they didn't have any direct knowledge of a crime committed by Burke. Burke never admitted to the crime to them. And Burke has, in fact, denied it. And we want to prove that by showing all this testimony from all these people who say that Burke denied an underlying crime. Well, that has never been a defense to an obstruction case until Attorney General Barr came out and said that they weren't going to charge the president with obstruction because there was no underlying crime. And it's going to be very important and very interesting to see now if that defense is going to work in this case. having had the president held to that standard. And I have to believe that that's why they're going for this type of defense now, is simply based on what the attorney general's position was with the Mueller report. So I'm fascinated to watch how this whole thing unfolds. Judge Azraq is a terrific judge. She's been dealt, I think, a bum hand with back-to-back Mangano and then Spoder and McPartland. But I think she's a very good, smart judge. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So, folks, stay tuned on this one.
Well, I tell you, you got sentencing for Mangano coming up next month, and then this thing. And I'll tell you, Azraq's going to need a 6-month vacation when it's all said and done, back to back, as you say. But you're right. I mean, it is a center point. Basically, the government claimed that everyone knew Burke was guilty, and you know, forget the notion that Spoda and McFarland might have known that. So, you know, it's going to be a very interesting caveat right there. Burke admitting his guilt to everyone as claimed by the government, or whether he denied it all to just about anyone who listened, pretty much. So to me, that's where it centers around. It's going to be a fascinating situation coming up on November the 12th. Let's head to the Purdue Pharma deal. Listen. They're going to settle cases. They saw what happened to Johnson & Johnson, the $572 million that they're going to have to pay out in the state of Oklahoma, the opioid cases, folks. They're taking the initiative. They're going to settle some of these cases here. They're probably doing the right thing. Listen, right now it's a losing battle for all of these pharmaceuticals based on what happened to J&J there. It's a serious thing. People are watching. That's the key, Joe. And there has to be some sort of retribution in place, as we have seen. But Purdue right now has nowhere to go but settle these cases.
Yeah, and last time we talked about J&J, and this is certainly a byproduct because everybody was watching what Johnson & Johnson was going to do on this. Purdue Pharma has no choice. The settlement, you know, requires them to go into bankruptcy. It requires them to basically give up control of the entire company. There is no winning. There is no way for these companies to win these cases, Jay. There's no way, because there is no way that they can ever get a jury of people where opioids have not adversely impacted that person's life in one way, shape, or form. Every family in America has had some tragedy happen in their family or friends or coworkers where opioids have had a negative impact, right? And so there's never going to be a jury that's going to sit on that bench with an open mind and be listening to the billions and billions and billions of dollars of profit that these companies have gotten from these drugs, ignoring all of the statistics, ignoring all of the crisis, not proactively trying to do anything about it, and not getting whacked severely by a jury. It's just never going to happen. You talk about jury taint. This is a national epidemic that impacts every family in America, and they know that. So they did the only thing they could do, which was, you know, they're filing for bankruptcy, they're giving up control of the company, and they're basically saying, we're out. You know, we're out. Whatever we have, take. We know we can't beat this. So do it. And I think about half of the state's attorneys general have accepted that. I think half of them, including New York, have not. I'm not sure what's left after bankruptcy. I'm not sure if they're going to be going after principal members and CEOs and directors for assets. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but to me, it's the right play. You know, these companies ignored so many tragic signs, so many tragic events out there, and profited billions and billions and billions of dollars. That money should be going, to the people and the families whose lives were destroyed.
100%. Maybe if you had some more regulation in place, wouldn't have happened in the first place, Joe. But you're right. We have these pharmaceuticals were let to walk on water for so long, you know, just pumping out their products, really saying very little about the addiction of it all. Very, very heavy, not a lot of marketing regarding that at all, and giving so much supply as far as in relation to demand, thus the excess of what you have seen here, and thus the problems and deaths of a crisis that we have seen here with all this. So, yeah, they're doing the right thing, and really, no choice. You can have others follow, too, regarding this. Should be interesting. Joel Campolo off the record, on the record. Joel, we'll tackle one more before we get into the whole CMM stuff. I had a doctor on in the 7 o'clock hour regarding these e-cigarettes. It's a problem. It's really let off all of the national news in the last week or so. It's a growing problem. Doctor makes some great points. Others I didn't agree with. But pretty much, ladies and gentlemen, the federal government now, will act to ban, the flavored stuff, the ban the flavors of these e-cigarettes, making, you know, it was kind of an unexpected announcement that the president made amidst this surge in underage vaping, the outbreak of lung illness all linked to this. What do you think? Is it the right approach, Joe, to ban? Is it an approach that maybe regulations should be? I mean, this is a very interesting tug of war that could happen here within the legal system.
It's very complicated. I will tell you, Jay, on a very, personal level, someone that I knew, someone who was a friend, died from excessive vaping due to these nodules that get into their lungs. And this is probably 2 or 3 months ago, directly from that. And another very good friend was hospitalized because of it and was in really critical, condition. And this is another example of something that just has an addictive property to it. It hasn't been fully vetted out. It hasn't been fully explored as to what the long-term effects of it were. Everybody knows that. Our young people have gravitated to it, incredibly, overwhelmingly, like a swarm of bees, like these Juul, vaping, products. Everybody's doing it. And it's not just, college age. It's not just high school age. Middle school kids are vaping on these Juuls. The other part of it though is, the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana has created a huge black market of marijuana products that people can vape. And those are the ones that, are causing a lot of problems with people's lungs. They're not sure if there's because of vitamin E being added to them or anything else. Look, I'm a firm believer of, people should be able to do what people want to do. We're free people, and if I want to eat 50 Big Macs a day, I should be able to eat 50 Big Macs a day, as long as it's not, negatively impacting anybody else. And so if people want to smoke cigarettes nowadays, the warnings are so clear, and the marketing is so adverse to smoking cigarettes that if you want to do it and you know the consequences, you do what you're going to do. It's a free society. The problem with vaping and e-cigarettes is we don't know what the causes are. We don't know exactly what the dosage is that causes that. We don't know what's causing this phenomenon. And so I don't think until we are able to give people information, valid information, to say these are the risks, this is the suggested dosage, this is what you should be doing, this is what you should not be doing with it, until that point, I'm not sure that it should just be released onto the free market. So our kids can be using it. And, parents don't have any education as to whether or not it's good, bad, or indifferent. So it's going to be a very, very long series of legal battles, as you mentioned. But, I see it impact the kids so much that I'd rather be safe than sorry on this one.
Listen, the doc said he's right. THC, too much of this. They're getting it on the street, the e-oil and everything else. And that's what's causing these issues. 6 deaths, all 50 plus, by the way. And you see a lot of these kids now in the hospital. You've seen the video and everything else hooked up to machines. Listen, to me, what I disagree with the doctor, what he said earlier, was it is still an addiction to me. Just like cigarettes, it's an addiction. It's nicotine, Joe. Nicotine is a toxic substance that still gets into the lungs and can cause problems. There is still an addictive nature to this all. And if it was up to me, I'd ban all the products like that. I'll tell you that much. It's still no good for you. But right now what you're seeing is the influx on the street. To me, it's almost comparable to the gun deal, because we know that people get these weapons on the street that commit the damage and everything else. You know, you can tell me about background checks and everything else. They're well needed. Banning assault weapons, we know about, okay? The fact of the matter is you get this stuff on the black market, you can't possibly do anything as far as what's going on. You want to regulate it? Tell me about regulating it. But right now, the problem is we still have a gray area in all this. That's the whole issue here, you know? And we know, as Dr. Niskin told me earlier, in the 7 o'clock hour, you have a lot of people that are getting sick because of the THC input. That's what you get in the black market, Joe.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I've seen. I've had, like I said, personal experience with people, you know, doing that and unfortunately not making it recently. And it's been terrible because this black market is right. But the slippery slope, Jay, is, you know, the government's got to be careful to be banning things just because they're addictive. I mean, sugar is probably one of the most addictive things that are out there. And, you know, this gets back to when Bloomberg, you know, wanted to ban the super gulps, the super big gulps out of 7-Eleven because of the sugar. I get it. You know, but I think our policy or a better policy to help keep people's liberties in place are, we need to understand what it is. We need to have full disclosure. We need to have full warnings. We need to be educating the public as to the dangers of doing it. And then people are going to do what people are going to do. I mean, that's just the way it's going to work. Banning it is going to be a very difficult road to hoe for the government.
Joe Campolo, off the record, on the record with us, Campolo, Middleton, McCormick. Best law firm out there, ladies and gentlemen, voted that way as well. Joe, let's get into some of the happenings in and around. You are continuing, from what I'm reading, to hire seeking attorneys, paralegals, administrative professionals. You can go on the site, folks, cmmllp.com/careers. Check it out. Or you can call Devin Palma at 631-738-9100. So I like the fact you're expanding and everything else, but also looking for those next stars, right?
Yeah, we are looking for talented professionals that want to join our team. So if you know, we're looking for business development folks, we're looking for real estate professionals, we're looking for administrative professionals, we're looking for great people to join our team. So please, if you have any interest in joining a dynamic law firm that's growing, check us out. Reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you.
That was all this week. The Greater New York Paralegal Society Symposium. So it's a one. Did that already take place, by the way?
Yeah, it took place. It was great. You know, paralegals, Jay, paralegals are critical to the growth of the legal community. The same way physicians assistants and nurse practitioners have played an emerging role in healthcare, paralegals are playing a huge role in the legal society, and we were very proud to be hosting that this past week. It was a great event, great turnout.
You held your first event, the Young Professional Series, right? That was yesterday. A lot of companies, folks, you know, you hear a bandit about millennials, a lot of complaints, and not enough of being proactive to train those types of young professionals for roles all throughout companies. And what the initiative, I guess the series, does is that it bridges that gap, right, Joe?
Yeah, so, you know, we have great companies, and people look on our social media, great companies that are our clients, and, you know, our relationship with those companies are at the higher level, okay? But they have a ton of young professionals working for them, and we have a ton of young professionals working for us. So my idea was, let's get the younger folks from their organizations to be networking and getting to know the younger professionals in our organization, so that we'll have generational relationships going on. And in addition, we'll all be helping each other, train each other, and grow these younger professionals so that our relationships remain strong and the younger generation is getting the training it needs to grow together.
And finally, I'll say this. You have the sexual harassment training. The deadline to train employees, I think, is, what, October 9th. And you can attend the session for managers on September 24th. And for employees, by the way, that is October the 2nd. You can register on the site again, cmmlp.com. You can call the firm, 631-738-9100. Big topic. I know our company's concentrating on this, all companies, really. But it's important training, Joe.
Yeah, and we're hustling and bustling. My partner, Christine Malafi, is heading that initiative up. We're hustling and bustling all over the island to help people make sure they're in compliance. So if you need our help, we're certainly willing to do what we got to do.
Off the record, on the record, the great firm, of course, Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. And we will see Joe in a couple of weeks. I'll see him next week. Look forward to that. But always great to have you, sir. And I will be watching the Mets and have the broom out for you. How's that? As Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman. Patrick Medford. Huh, Joe? Going for the old
Swaggeroo
there.
Love it.
All right, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Talk to you, Jay. Thanks.